And welcome back to the Very Professional podcast. On today's episode, I interviewed Dr. Dave Gent, an engineer and businessman who started his own company, which aims to provide socially responsible solutions to engineering problems. Hope you enjoy the episode.
Do you want to just start by introducing yourself?
I'm Dr. Dave Gent. I'm a Doctor of Civil Engineering. I'm based in Nottingham. I did my doctorate at Nottingham Trent University, and I run a company called ECSL.
And what made you decide to run your own company?
I guess after finishing my doctorate, I felt like I really wanted to try and make a, you know, take that learning and try and make a difference, really. So and running my own company allows me to kind of mold and focus my attention on the things that I really want to do, the things I'm really passionate about, things like social responsibility, sustainable innovation, and bring all of those sort of concepts into engineering, really. Sometimes you can't do that at bigger companies. They already have a set way of doing things. So being a small company allows us the flexibility to try and introduce the latest innovation and to really pursue those socially responsible engineering projects.
So can you give me like an example of how you've done that? So a project that's socially responsible?
So a really good one that links in with my PhD was, so my PhD was about maintaining historic structures, something I've really had a passion for about 20 years now, ever since I was at university. The history side of engineering really appeals to me, you know, learning about how we did, you know, we took all these materials and things we'd never used back in the Victorian times, and we really learned how to use them and harness them for the good of, you know, society, really. And that's why we have all these big old rusty bridges. So the opportunity came up with Nottingham Trent to do a PhD and sort of really push the knowledge and understanding of how we look after these old structures. And so while I was doing my PhD research, I linked up with an organization called SusTrans, which stands for Sustainable Transport. And they kind of, you'll probably know them for the people who look after all the cycle paths around the UK. So SusTrans, after British Rail got made defunct in the 1960s, SusTrans took ownership and responsibility for a lot of those old railway lines that had been closed, and they've been turning them into cycle paths ever since. Some have been really successful, like the link between Bath and Bristol, for example, which is the first one they did. And now they estimate that more people use it for cycling between the two cities every day than they did on the trains back when it's open. So it's really a good use of those old railway lines. So doing my research, I needed some bridges to mess around with and to apply some experiments on. And SusTrans happened to have about 1,300 of these old rusty structures around the country. So they let me kindly borrow some of those. So we looked at SusTrans's biggest problems with looking after those structures, and we looked at how that links in with the research that I was doing, and we developed a technique for a cheaper, more environmentally friendly, but, you know, not as robust way of looking after rusty bridges. It's cheaper, it's more environmentally friendly, and the volunteers can apply it, but it won't last 20 years like a modern paint system. But at the same time, if you've got lots of volunteers and not a lot of money, then you can, you know, it's to your benefit. So now we've taken that and we've pushed that on with my research, and I linked that up with SusTrans, and now SusTrans have adopted that on all of their bridges. So that's one way that, you know, the projects that we look at, the socially responsible projects, link up with saving our clients money, especially when they're charitable organizations, is a really socially responsible thing to do. So I don't know if that really answered your question.
Yeah, it has to some extent. So are a lot of your clients charities or like smaller companies?
Well, that's the beauty of running my own company. You know, you work for a large organisation, and there's nothing wrong with working for large organisations. They've got the capability and the capacity to deliver massive schemes. But there's a lot of organisations out there like SusTrans, like Heritage Railways, like Railway Paths Limited. You know, they have assets, but they don't have the money that would entice larger organisations to go and complete those projects for them. So being a smaller firm, a more flexible firm with a wide range of capacity capabilities means that we can go and do those projects for them at a lower cost base. So and plus we're all very, very passionate about sort of looking after those old structures. So
do you think that's somewhat an area of engineering that's going to become more important going forward, so like a more sustainable way of doing things?
I think so. I'd like to think so. I'd like to hope so. I mean, you look at the way, I mean, I'm getting on a bit now, you know, my time in the industry is probably closer to its end than your time in the industry. So I'm hoping that, you know, your generation will be able to, look at the way the world is going at the moment and really want to make a difference and want to do things in a more socially responsible, more environmentally friendly way. I mean, I know it's easy for us to say that living in a developed country, it's easy for us to say, oh, you know, we should do things more environmentally friendly. But I'm hoping that the next generation will be passionate about making the changes that are needed to ensure that, you know, the safety and the security and the longevity of our planet, really. So, you know, we've got the capacity to do it. We've got the capability to do it. We should be utilizing all that innovation that's out there and available, and we should, and you know, and taking lessons learned from the past. We haven't always done things right, and it's easy for us to preach to people and say, well, you shouldn't do those things, but we did do those things in the past, but we've learned from it. So we should try and take that learning and take the solutions that we've now developed and help everybody.
Why do you think people haven't started doing this sooner? Because obviously you're one of very few companies that takes sustainability and the impact on society quite seriously.
I don't want to cast too many accusations, but I'd like to say that profitability isn't our key driver. You know, we don't have any shareholders. We're not beholden to any shareholders. At the end of the day, as long as we can all pay the bills, we should be putting our services and our skills and experience to trying to make a difference, trying to make that difference. So, you know, we haven't got a 10% profitability target at the end of the year. We obviously need to make money like any other business, but there's nothing to say that we can't do that working on you know, responsible projects in a responsible way. So
I think that's a really good ethos to have. So going back a while, I suppose, when you first started out as an engineer, did you know that you wanted to start your own business?
I don't know, it was a long time ago now, wasn't it? I graduated 15 years ago now this year. I didn't know that I wanted to start my own business. I mean, I was very fortunate, I guess, back when I started. I'd been working part-time while I was at university. I don't think I really wanted to do that type of engineering. And I ended up working for AECOM in their highways and bridges department, as it was at the time. And I really, my first project was a historic bridge. And I really kind of, that really appealed to me as a person, the history and the engineering. So I was quite lucky I found my passion quite early. But at the same time, I've mentored a lot of engineers over the years. And it is really difficult to find your passion. You know, I definitely recognize I was very lucky that the amount of engineers that I've mentored over the years, and you know, you get to chartership and they still don't really know which bit of engineering they want to pursue going forward. You know, I was quite lucky. So I was quite lucky in that I found my passion about historic bridges, but I didn't know that I wanted to start my own company either at the same time. But at the same time, I've always been bad at being told what to do. So I guess it was inevitable eventually. I was going to walk away from being told what to do every day and take those decisions into my own hands. So,
what's been kind of your biggest achievement so far?
I was talking about this with another engineer yesterday who we're preparing for chartership at the moment. And we were talking about how chartership is really important. And, you know, and after you finish university, chartership is kind of the next goalpost. And you know, chartership is really important. And it's a really good, it's a real good benchmark, and it's a really good sort of cap to say, you know, I am a good engineer and I can do all of these things. And when I got chartered, it was my proudest moment. But since then, I would argue that completing my doctorate has probably been an even prouder moment for me. You know, that's taken all of the things that I'm really passionate about and helping to try and make a difference to the industry by completing some research that then has gone off to change the way things actually happen. So I think, finishing my PhD is probably my proudest moment.
So, okay, so for the sake of people that don't know what chartership is, what is chartership and how do you get chartered as an engineer?
Wow, okay. So chartership is a professional qualification. So your degree is an academic qualification and your PhD is an academic qualification, and you're becoming a chartered engineer is a bit like, attaining the bar in law, for example. It's basically a structured development process. So you go through and you develop yourself as a person and as an engineer in nine sort of in certainly for the ICE anyway, and the Institution of Civil Engineers is the sort of nine attributes. So they look at different elements of your working life. So you've got your technical engineering capability. You've also got commercial and management and leadership, and also then you've also got elements of sustainability and it's really bad because I'm stuttering for words, but one of the key skills is communication. So and really, once you become a chartered engineer, that's saying, you know, I am a well-rounded engineer. I'm able to take my technical capabilities, I'm able to communicate those well to other people. And I am able to, and I'm also aware of the socially responsible, the sustainable impact of my actions, and also the commercial impact. And I'm able to balance all of those things to deliver a project that is successful. So that's what it is really. And being a chartered engineer is a really it's a high achievement. It's often the high point in everybody's career, really. You kind of, that's what you're aiming for. You want to be a chartered engineer, really. And that kind of sets you up well for being a leader in the industry, really. You know, that suddenly you're a senior or a principal engineer, you're leading a team of 5, 10 or 20 people to deliver projects then at that point in your career. So I don't know if I explained it that well, but it...
Is it something that you would say people you would need in order to progress as an engineer, or is it something that not everybody feels like they want to do?
It's hard to say it's a need. There's plenty of successful engineers out there that didn't get chartered, and there's plenty of successful engineers out there that that were successful before chartership was ever a thing. I mean, but what it is it's a good benchmark, and it's a good thing to have on your CV, really, to say, you know, I'm an engineer that can do all of these things, but B, I've actually put the effort in to go through that process to achieve that. So I think personally as a manager, I think it's a really good thing to have in your CV because it tells me that you're prepared to put the effort in to seek development yourself. So that's it. And I would say that it's a good thing for everybody to do. I support all of my engineers to go through that, and I've supported plenty of people over the years, and not just graduates. You know, I've supported people who are, some would probably consider at the back end of their careers. You know, they're in their 50s or 60s, and some people ask them, why do you want to go for chartership? And it's like, well, I want to prove that I can do it. I want to prove that I am a good engineer at the end of the day. So I definitely think it's a good thing to do. And even if you never actually sit the chartership qualification at the end of it, that process of continuous professional development is really important as an engineer. You've got to accept the fact that there is changes in the industry, there's changes in technology, there's changes in learning and the way we do things. And you need to stay on top of that. You can't. One of my biggest gripes is there's plenty of people out there will do things because that's the way we've always done it. And it's good that we've got things that we've always done successfully, but we should always seek improvement in the way those things are done, because just because you've always done something that way doesn't mean you can't do it better. And it doesn't mean, and if you've done it that many times already, you should be able to do it better. So I think if you've got the opportunity, you should go for chartership, and I will always support people to go. Yeah, it just demonstrates your ability to develop yourself.
As a manager, I suppose, or as someone that chooses their employees, there something you look for when you look at applications, or is there, are there certain skills that you think future engineers should have?
I mean it's hard to kind of talk about that. I'm not very good at I say I'm a manager because I guess it's the best description of what I do in terms of managing people, but I don't really like to think myself as somebody who at the top of the chain and everybody's beneath me. That's not the way we work. We work as a team. And I think before I was an engineer, I was in the military. So one of the key skills that I always look for is teamwork and the ability to work with others, because you could be the smartest person in the world, but if you're not going to work with the team around you, then the project's not going to be a success. Projects are only delivered successfully by everybody working together well. And you know what? It doesn't matter if you don't all know the answers, because together you'll figure it out. And if you do make mistakes, that's great, as long as you do it together, because you'll all learn from it. So I guess the key things that I look for are the ability to work with the others, and the other is just a passion for wanting to do good work, to learn, to develop, to, you know, a passion about engineering. I mean, all members of our team are passionate about wanting to deliver things in a more sustainable, socially responsible way. And some of the more junior members of the team that we've taken on recently are, you know, some of them haven't even graduated yet. So they're not the finished article. They're not finished engineers, but they are passionate about engineering and they're passionate about learning. So they really fit in well.
You mentioned that you were in the military before. That's quite a change from engineering. What made you go down that route?
Well, that's a long story. I mean, I always wanted to be in the army as a kid, and unfortunately, I'm short-sighted. So you sign up and you join. I didn't join the army in the end. I joined the Navy because there was no way I was going to be on the front line with my bad eyes. So, and I spent a few years in the Navy, but it's one of those things. It's, as a kid, I always wanted to be in the army, and then suddenly I was told that that's not something I could do. So as a young adult, it was very hard to accept that. The fact that the thing I'd always wanted to do, I couldn't do. But I'd trained as an artificer in the Navy. So I was an engineer by trade anyway. So when I was looking at, you know, what am I going to suddenly do with my life now? The thing I really wanted to do, I can't do. And so I kind of fell into engineering. Nottingham Trent at the time were, they were looking for local students and, they were looking, again, trying to do something more socially responsible rather than just taking in loads of students from overseas, which would, you know, be quite good for revenue. They were looking to support local students that wanted to go to university. And I came from a fairly poor background. There was no way I was ever going to go to university as a kid. But I happened to just be there at the right time, really. And they paid my tuition fees. So, I mean, it was a real real stroke of luck, I'd say. I haven't looked back. I couldn't imagine doing anything else other than engineering now. I mean, it's problem solving to do every day, and you know, no two projects are the same. So keep you on your toes.
Has coronavirus changed the way you work as a firm?
It's really interesting, actually, because, I mean, I started the firm a year ago, but it was just me. And then I started employing people in sort of March, just as coronavirus hit. So we got an office. And then it's been empty for 3 months. So we've all been working on Teams and Zoom. I mean, it has helped that I generally knew a lot of the engineers that I've employed before we started working together. It has been tough, but at the same time, I think it's been amazing for the industry, because suddenly I don't have, you know, the amount of times I've been on a train for 4 hours to go to a half an hour meeting in Leeds or something. And now I don't have to do that. I can have the half an hour meeting, and I've still got the rest of my day to do more stuff. So I think it's been good for the industry, to be honest, in terms of making us take all that innovation and technology that we already had. You know, we already had Skype. We've had Skype for about 5 years. We just don't use it. But now we've had to use it, so it's good. So I think changes like that have been very beneficial to, and probably not just to our industry, probably to a lot of different sectors, to be honest. And you know, suddenly when I was a kid, there was that dream of a paperless office, and now I haven't even bought a printer. We haven't printed anything for 6 months. Wow. So I would say suddenly that, you know, in adversity, there's opportunity. So
do you have any last words of advice for future engineers or even current engineers?
Last words. I mean, all I would say is, you know, with what's going on in the world at the moment, times are changing, times are going to be difficult. You know, not just coronavirus, but you look at the world as a whole. We need to be able to step up and do things differently. So if you're passionate about doing that, now's the time to go and do it. Don't just talk about it. Go and actually do something that's going to make a difference, because if we don't do it now, we're not going to get another opportunity.
Listening to today's episode, but I hope you enjoyed it. As always, share the episode if you found it interesting.